This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 55 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
Hi, David. Boy, we've got our usual collection of stories to talk about this episode, but, you know, a lot of them relate to the UAS test sites.
Yeah, I jokingly set up in our show notes, a this week in UAS test sites. joking setup, but... We're now up to the last final one. We were speculating September or October. Who knew that it was going to be a week later? Mm-hmm. And that's the Mid-Atlantic Aviation Partnership. And they seem to be up and running. And I don't know if this is the biggest area covered, but I mean, it's Maryland, New Jersey, and Virginia. But before we get to that, we've got some other topics. We have a drone for you. Piping plovers prevent UAV flying people. The FAA is bad. Evidently, the Dutch are worse. And, of course, we'll talk about our new test site, the Mid-Atlantic Aviation Partnership, and, of course, a video of the week. But before we get started, I'm going to say I'm disappointed in our listeners. We had to work really hard to find a video of the week. We did not get a lot of listener feedback. So come on, folks. You don't drop the ball on us. We count on you. But on that little complaint, I should get going. So let's start off with our first news story.
This comes from The Verge, the drone you should buy right now. What they've done is they've looked at sort of the field out there, quadcopters, devices like that, that you can actually go out and purchase, and they've picked five of the top hobby drones. Now, it's an interesting list. It kind of spans the spectrum from tiny to moderately sized, also from inexpensive to, not too cheap. But the number one drone you should buy right now, according to The Verge, is, guess what, David?
You know, I used to complain about Predators and Reapers. I'm going to start complaining about DJI Phantom 2s, but I got to give them credit. Parker said it best. It's the gateway drug to awesome. So their first choice was the DJI Phantom 2, which they gave a score of 8.0, and they're talking a Vision 2 Plus that comes with the camera. So you're talking $1,300 in United States currency to go fly this gateway. So it's not surprising, but some of the other ones are much better to get started. The one I kind of like is the number two one, because I'm an iPhone guy, and that's the Parrot AR Drone 2.0, which got a not bad score of 7.5, and the price is only $300. It is RTF. Now, that's one of those terms that's lingering around for the hobbyist or the radio control world. RTF stands for Ready to Fly, which means it's basically take it out of the box and away you go. But, of course, remember the Parrot AR drone, you need to fly off of your iPhone with an app. So how about number three?
Number three, we dropped the price quite a bit. This is the Hubsan X4, and they gave that a score of 7.3. It's a $50 little quadcopter. They thought that it represented a good starter quadcopter in that it is very small. It includes a camera. And so for those reasons, they like the Hubsan X4.
And then, of course, we have the Estes 4606 Pro X Nano. This was slightly a lower score, but a price of $40. But it's really just designed for indoor flying. This is good old Estes that, you know, the hobby modelist rockets. I mean, I don't know how many rockets I've shot over my years, but it's the size of a silver dollar. and it's just designed for indoor flying. So I kind of like this. Maybe I can sneak it to work and fly it around my cube.
And then coming in fifth was the 3D Robotics Iris. They gave a 6.0 score to that. We're climbing back up the price scale for hobbyist quadcopters a little bit, up to $750. And they liked it in that they thought it was a powerful quadcopter that a beginner could learn on. But in their tests, they found the build quality lacking slightly. They thought the controls were a little on the complex side, and they actually had difficulty flying the thing. But it did come in number five, and so that's there's your list of top drones that, at least according to The Verge, that you can go out and buy right now.
And, of course, this does not reflect reviews of the management. I kind of like very large hexacopters. And of course, Max, we haven't had an update. Have we gone flying recently?
No, I haven't gone flying recently in my little quadcopter. I need to get back into that. I think life has sort of gotten in the way. But, you know, just very briefly on the topic of, you know, where should you start with quadcopters? The DJI Phantom is, by all accounts, very easy to fly, not inexpensive, but, you know, you can right out of the box do some amazing things. There's another school of thought that says, you know what, get one of these little guys, something very small, and learn how to fly first. Get something that's lightweight, that can you can crash it easily, because you will, without breaking it or breaking it too much. And then after you sort of hone your flying skills, then move up the chain to more impressive machines. But anyway, I guess, David, we should start off now with our This Week in Test Site News segment.
It's a good thing, you know, that we have this much information that we could have a whole segment for This Week in Test Site News. It's hard to believe that this time last year we were talking about them just having someone bid for the test site. So we finally got our final FAA announcement, and this was from FAA.gov. The FAA granted Virginia Tech 7 certificates of waiver or authorizations, COAs, one of our favorite terms, for 2 years. This I was sort of surprised at, the volume of, maybe this is why it took so long to get their approval, that we've got a lot of different types of drones flying in the Mid-Atlantic Center.
Yeah, we do. And as we've mentioned with the other test sites, the COAs have come through for very specific UAVs or very specific missions. And like you say, David, here we've got a broad cross-section. We have the Smart Road Flyer. Now, this is something that monitors the Virginia Tech Smart Road Test Track. It's a UAV that's monitoring self-driving cars. And then we have the ESPARO, which stands for the Electric Small Platform for Autonomous Aerial Research Operations. That's a fixed-wing UAV. Then there's the Aeron Skyranger, which is a quadcopter. The Mantra 2, the SIG Rascal fixed-wing. And then to round it out, 2 little Avid EDF-8 micro UASs. These are really tiny things. Not as small as that Estes quadcopter, I don't think, but they're really designed to be used indoors or in tight spaces. So that's site number 6 operational now. So that's great news.
Yeah, and a diversification. And this one is kind of different than everybody else's because it's multiple states and multiple sites. I know we talked about in one of the early episodes, New Air has got basically Massachusetts and New York. They have a corridor built. But in this case, this is Virginia, New Jersey, and Maryland, with Virginia leading the charge, the Virginia Polytechnical Institute. And they formed the Mid-Atlantic Aviation Partnership. I do think it's kind of interesting that if you heard Mid-Atlantic Aviation Partnership, would the words UAV or UAS or drone come to your mind?
No, it's aviation. It's about flying.
it's about right. It was just it's interesting that they've chose a neutral sounding organization, and part of this is besides the Virginia test site, one of my favorite military bases of all time, which is the naval base at Patuxent River, Maryland, or Pax River, is going to be part of the Virginia site. So the MAP, M-A-A-P, will be working with the Navy at Pax River on some of their testing.
Yeah, and we see from GCN that the University of Maryland is part of the Mid-Atlantic Aviation Partnership, and they've launched their UAS test site that's going to be based in St. Mary's County, which, as you say, David, is close to the Pax River Naval Air Station. And so I think they're planning on some working relationship with the guys there. Is that how you see this?
Yeah, Patuxent River actually flies the Global Hawk, well, the Poseidon, the Navy version of Global Hawk, and they have test airspace over the Patuxent River and the Chesapeake Bay. So it's an area where they could operate, and the Navy knows how to operate with drones in the area. Remember, the X-47B flew out of there, too. Mm-hmm. And the other part about it is St. Mary's County has always been, and over the years has grown into a high technology zone. We talk about various places having technology zones, and from the base, a lot of computers and high tech. It's kind of an East Coast computer geekery component. So I'm sure that Maryland is going to work with the companies that are based in that St. Mary's County tech zone. So yes, I like Pax River. Yes, I've spent a lot of time down there, so that's why I know all of this stuff. But let's talk about somewhere else that I spend lots and lots and lots of time at. We've talked about the Virginia component. We've talked about the Maryland component, but there's also a New Jersey component. And the test area is based for New Jersey is at U.S. Coast Guard Station Cape May. Unfortunately, a little birdie by the name of piping plovers and red knots, which are endangered migratory birds, have prevented New Jersey Institute of Technology from flying their drones because they're afraid they're going to damage the habitat of these two endangered species. And besides, it's really kind of fun to say piping plovers.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and we see this in Philly.com, drone testing delayed to protect migratory birds. And apparently this location is where these birds stop for a period of time in their migration. These birds, as you mentioned, David, are endangered. And in fact, they're protected by the Federal Endangered Species Act, as well as New Jersey law. So this is not some kind of arbitrary thing going on here. There's really no option for anyone. And so the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has postponed the testing, the UAV testing, until November, which is after the birds' migratory season there in New Jersey is over. They will allow the New Jersey Institute of Technology, NJIT, to test drones between November 1st and March 15th, and also fly them from the Coast Guard base there for up to 14.5 nautical miles over the ocean. But they do have these restrictions. I don't know if this was something that was anticipated or kind of came up and threw a monkey wrench, if you will, into the works.
You mean a piping plover?
Piping plover.
But in all fairness, NJIT, they're charged with developing drone technology for communications during storms and catastrophic events. Well, November 1st to March 15th, they're going to get plenty of storms to practice flying in and for that technology. So I get the impression that it was an afterthought. Let's face it, it's not a bad thing that they're admitting that there's an endangered species and we don't want to interrupt that fly zone. Because Cape May is really a wild bird sanctuary and a big deal for fly zones up through, including things like monarch butterflies. Beautiful town, great place to get married. Met my wife there. I mean, but all that side notes. It'll be kind of cool that I can go down to the beach, read a book, and maybe see some drones flying, because I tend to do go down the other times of the year. So,
well, maybe there's an unexpected opportunity here, David. Maybe this is the opportunity to do some testing and do some research concerning the interaction of drones and wildlife. Maybe this is an aspect of this that they hadn't thought of, but maybe it's an opportunity as well. But yep. Let's move across the country now, David.
This was kind of upsetting. I don't know if Nevada was the first one or the second one that was approved.
North Dakota was the first. Nevada was third.
Nevada was third, okay.
Because Alaska was second.
This was from the reviewjournal.com. Nevada drone testing off to a slow start. Right now, as of April, the Nevada site has only generated $300,000 of revenue, and that was from one company testing their UAS. A quote from the article say they said they've had about 300 companies that have been identified that have interest in flying in Nevada. They've contacted about a third of them, okay, 100, and serious conversations are being held with 20. But unfortunately, they've already requested $1.25 million out of a $4 million trust fund established by the state legislature for the UAV program.
I thought this kind of painted a picture of this test site operating as almost as a commercial enterprise, where interested companies would purchase flight time, test equipment, I'm not sure what exactly, at this Nevada test site and thereby generate revenue. The article mentions that the Nevada UAS test site hopes that they will be financially self-sufficient by 2015. So I guess this fund, this state fund of $4 million is designed to carry them through that. So they are looking at some options to include indoor testing as a way to bring in other interested companies to do some testing, because the FAA doesn't control indoor testing, doesn't have anything to say about indoor testing. And so that's pretty much, you know, you're free to do whatever you like if it's indoors. And so maybe that's something that they're going to look at.
I hope we, now that we've gone through the good news, I hope we don't go through a cycle of bad news. And one of the comments that was made in the article was, of course, there was a little bit of finger pointing that the FAA is very slow to do anything, and it makes it difficult for the people to do the testing. So we'll have to follow that along. But let's go from Nevada with no water to a land that I'm kind of fond of, with lots of water, and that's the Netherlands. And this was from DutchNews.nl. Dutch drones miss out through tough rules. So it looks like the Netherlands is even tougher than the FAA when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, and that's impacting some of the activities there. The Dutch have rules that govern UAVs. And until a couple of years ago, UAVs were considered as model aircraft, and so there really wasn't a lot of regulations. But 2 years ago, they were brought under the aviation rule, and so that kind of changed everything. And the Dutch rules are now stricter than what you typically find in other European countries. And so that's affecting the ability of the Dutch to conduct test flights of various sorts.
But it's interesting that we have this article, because within a day or so, we have an article from member.hydrointernational.com. And this is a very technical article, but it was commented, UAS at the beach, or I like to call it, they're keeping up with the dikes. And dikes being the water protection that prevents the Netherlands from flooding. And this was a survey done by a Microdrone MD4-1000 quadcopter with LiDAR. And it's a very technical article about using a UAV to simplify inspection of dikes and the waterways to prevent flooding. You know, they're so, and in this case, it was a water break for ships, but they created basically a 3D model of this break front, which they could use to, as a baseline to tell erosion over time. And it's a very in-depth article, but, and very technical, but, it's well worth a good read.
Yeah, another good use. Obviously, with so much of the land in the Netherlands being below sea level and all of the dikes and the breakwaters and so forth, the structures to keep the land from flooding, these things don't just last forever. So they have to conduct inspections and monitor and repair as necessary these structures. And in order to study them and to see if things have shifted or moved or changed, they've been using airborne LiDAR as well as some other measurements. But that's very, very expensive to operate manned aircraft to perform that task. So with this quadcopter, they're able to accomplish much of the same thing at much, much lower cost. So I think it's indicative of the kinds of inspection missions that that are really well suited for drones, UAVs, and so forth. So yeah, that's great.
I don't even know where to begin with the next story. This is our weekly WTF. Back in the day there was UFOs, but now we have UAVs. And this was from the ChronicleHerald.ca. Mini UFO comes close to jetliner. Mm. We have a Canadian near miss, maybe.
And they don't really know. This is with an Air Canada Jazz aircraft commercial flight where the pilot reported a near miss with a possible drone, I guess. Now, this plane was climbing, but it was up at about 18,000 feet. The pilot said that they spotted a, quote, red and white vertical tube with rotor. And it was above the plane, but only about 300 meters above the plane. And nobody really knows what the pilot saw. And it's kind of a mystery. And I'm not sure they're expecting it to ever be solved. But yeah, the kind of big takeaway from this is that right where it used to be a UFO, if you didn't know what it was flying up there in the air, and now everybody seems to want to immediately go towards drone when they can't identify what they're seeing. So I think this is not the last story like this that we'll end up seeing.
It's just bizarre. The altitude is just very strange. But, and you know, my other part about it is pilots usually have really good eyes, and I really trust them to be able to identify other things. And it's one of those, which is kind of odd because it's always been an argument about UFOs. You know, when someone sees a UFO and it's a pilot and feels strongly enough to report it, you can trust them to describe what they were seeing. In this case, who knows? But yeah. We'll follow it on. But let's move on. We're running rapidly out of time. And we got a video of the week from Eric.
Yeah, this is a YouTube video, third person driving with a drone. The idea here is, what if you put a driver in a car and you put video goggles on that driver and then flew a multicopter with a camera over a course, and you wanted to find out, could the driver actually navigate the course driving this vehicle, the Mazda Miata in this case, just using the view from the multicopter? And this was done, you wouldn't want to do this on a public road or anything. This was done, they say, by trained drivers on a closed course. I think it was at an inactive airfield. But it was kind of interesting, but the guy actually did a pretty good job of navigating around just using the first-person view from the multicopter.
Okay, well, let's reiterate, we do not recommend this, that you try this at home.
Yeah, do not try this at home.
And last, we got some feedback. always good to get feedback. This was from Chad. Started off with, David and Max, thank you so much for a great show. I can't wait for each new episode to be posted to iTunes each week. Well, Chad, don't forget, if it's on iTunes, leave a feedback so that they know, so that other people can find us. But he was watching Discovery Show's Deadliest Catch, which, this being Shark Week on Discovery Channel, it was behind the lens. So it's basically a retrospective or how they make the actual Deadliest Catch. And for anybody who doesn't know, Deadliest Catch is about Alaskan king crab in the Bering Sea, and the trials and tribulations to get lots of money by risking your life and neck for king crab. I really appreciate those people who do that, because it brings king crab to my table, and that's not a bad thing. But he does go on to say a little bit, interestingly enough, they show and describe an octocopter to get some footage. But that's not the really impressive part, is it?
No, they show this crashing. Now, this is off, as you say, in the Bering Sea. And so the seas are rough. The weather is heavy. It's not a very great environment. But they show them crashing the octocopter while it was trying to get a close-up shot, he says, of a crab pot. And just when you thought it was destroyed, he says, they show the rebuilt. Only it's not an octocopter anymore. Now it's a quadcopter. And he says at the end, getting footage to supplement their Jet Ranger footage. But Chad says, I would love to know if they get a cease and desist letter from the FAA. I think all of us are thinking, gee, this is certainly a commercial use. Yeah. Chad is in agriculture, and he says he can't wait to start using these for crop and irrigation monitoring. But he's resisted so far this temptation because of his fear of getting fined more than he can afford. And he also closes saying he's seen the TV show Extreme Water Parks also using a quadcopter to get some of their footage. So, yeah, I think the use here seems commercial. I believe that, you know, this industry is... Well, they may be aware of the risks of getting the great shot, but the rewards for getting the great shot are so high that I think they're willing to take the risk.
But, Chad, I have an idea for you. I'm in agriculture and can't wait to start using these for crop and irrigation monitoring, but I've so far resisted the temptation of a fear of getting fined more than I can afford. But that's not to say, Chad, that you can't go out and get an octocopter or a quadcopter. Learn to fly it. If you're really going to want to use it for agriculture later, you might as well get one now, learn to fly it, and then when the FAA does allow it, then you can quickly transition to doing what you want with it, and you won't have the learning curve about how to fly it. So go get one and fly one.
Yeah, you can get a jump start on it, because I have to believe that in the end, agriculture, as well as some other industries, but particularly agriculture, is going to be able to use UAVs in very wonderful and productive and valuable ways. So it's got to happen. It just has to. I mean, you're talking about food production here. When that day will come, who knows? But yeah, like you say, David, I think it's a good idea. Get out there now and get started. Get a jump start on it, so that when it becomes allowable, you'll have the skills, maybe even the equipment, to get out and start right away.
So, Chad, there's your challenge. Keep us posted about you learning to fly your hexacopter or quadcopter, and then when we're ready, you're ready to go, you'll be able to move into agriculture.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for listening to episode 55 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter. Which we don't have yet, but you can still sign up. A number of people have been doing that. And you can also find show notes for this episode at the uavdigest.com/55 for episode 55.
And I think we should introduce and say thank you to our associate producer, who's been doing the show notes. So, Lisa, I personally and Max, I'm sure, really appreciate what you're doing for us to help us. So, don't forget, you can find her as Drone Mama on Twitter. So, but yeah, Lisa, thank you. I'm indebted to you because, you know, I still have the unfortunate day job. So thank you on that one. So, but you can also find us on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook / UAV Digest. And of course, send us listener mail, especially videos of the week. And that's feedback at the UAVDigest.com.
All right. If you want to send us individually email, David's at David at the UAV Digest.com. You can reach me at Max at the UAV Digest.com. You can also visit our webpage if you'd like to become a patron of the UAV Digest and help contribute to our efforts. You'll find a link on the webpage where you can do that.
And of course, we'd like to thank our sponsors. Definitely visit their websites, and we do appreciate everything they do for us. So with that note, this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.